It's his world. You just live in it. This is the Warren Markowitz Show.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Politics, 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 politics.
That's right. It's politics, politics, politics. Welcome and good morning. Hi, I'm your host, Warren Markowitz, and this is Politically Incorrect on the Warren Markowitz Show, live on Spreaker.com. Hope you're all enjoying your day, and I want to thank you very much for taking some time out to spend with me today. It is Friday, October 21st, and we are going to touch on a few things that have been really bugging me over the last couple of days. Free speech, freedom of assembly, basically the degeneration of civility in American politics. Yes, I've said it. We've become polarized. If you haven't figured that part out, you're probably living with your head under a rock or in a cave somewhere with Osama bin Laden. But either way, we've got issues. And we're not talking about a newsstand here. We're talking about the American political cycle. The American political psyche is so twisted and polarized at this point in time, we don't know whether we are on whose side or what. Think about it, folks. What we're looking for and what we're looking to address is fairly simple. The ability to have some political discourse. I don't care if it's with a white supremacist or a black separatist. I don't care if it's from a member of La Raza or if it's from an LGBTQ group that just simply wants to advance their own political agenda. If we can't talk it out, we wind up slugging it out. And if you haven't been paying attention to what's been going on in Berkeley, which sarcastically enough happens to be the birthplace of the free speech movement, we've gone from conversation to violence in a period of about 50 years. I don't know about you, but it's not my idea of fun. Sit tight, relax, enjoy the show, and I'll be back in about 30 seconds. We'll pick this whole thing up once again. Be good.
The Warren Markowitz Show on Red State Radio, Spreaker, and Podomatic.
All right, if you've been clocking that, that was the shortest 30 seconds on record, but hey, what the hell. Trigger alert. I'm not pulling back. I'm not holding anything today. I'm going to say things that are going to annoy you. I'm going to say things that are going to offend you. I'm even going to say things that are going to make you wonder what the hell is going on with this guy. But, too bad. It needs to be said. We need to talk about him. We're going to start with what's going on with this absurdity and a race relations card. America is a very diverse group of people. And I say America because America itself is, I mean, we have a continent, we have territory, we've got laws, language, structure, and so forth. But America itself is an idea. And I challenge anyone to say that that Russia is an idea. Russia is a defined place on a map. England is an idea. England was an idea. England is an empire. It had territory and it had influence. It had a place to be. But America is an idea. People come here for the ideals of that idea, for the goals of that idea. Now, there are limits to everyone's ability. I mean, long ago and far away, what we would imagine as a political galaxy far, far away, we had something that said, well, let me read it to you. It'd be a whole lot easier. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If you haven't been paying attention to anything, you'd recognize that That was an excerpt from the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and a pursuit of happiness. Well, I got a question. When did it turn out that we were guaranteed to be happy? When did somebody turn around and say, hey, they have to be happy? Whether they like it or not, they're going to be happy. Wherever you start, you're going to be happy. Life is filled with disappointments. Life is filled with issues that are going to upset you. Life is filled with people that are going to piss you off. Life is filled with those neighbors that you just don't want to talk to because you just, they're just not what you really want to deal with. But you deal with them. See, what I'm getting at is this. Over the last several months, I'll go back to when President Trump was elected. Over the last several months, what we've had is accusations, overt accusations of white supremacy, overt accusations of racism, misogyny, hatred. I mean, just vitriol that makes you sit there and wonder what in God's name is going on. The question of who is actually pushing these buttons. Because 8 years ago, we had protests, we had upset people, we had people who were worried about it, but we also had an electorate that simply said, well, you know what? I didn't vote for him, but, you know, you don't wish the captain of the ship to crash the plane because you don't like the captain. I'll be frank with anybody who will ask me. I didn't like Obama's policies. I wasn't pleased with the way Obama handled things. I called him out on several issues. I questioned his logic on several issues. But at no time at all did I wish this man any harm, or did I wish him to, you know, to wreck the economy because I thought he was wrong. That's an insane perspective, and yet that's what we're dealing with now. You see, what we've got now, the people who are making the stink now, the people who are raising the issues now, are those who have never lived in an environment in which the word no was ever shared, or an idea that might upset them was ever talked to them about. Listen, I'll be 50 years old in April. I have lived through, I was born in a civil rights era, I've lived through the 70s, I was a teenager in the 80s, and I became an adult in the Reagan era. My political spectrum, my understanding of things, they pretty much were defined by the influence of the people around me. And of course, by the circumstances. I remember 9/11. I remember the 1993 bombing. I remember the bombing of the barracks in Lebanon. All those things become pieces of our particular individual puzzles. But what I don't remember, and what I don't ever foresee or foresaw, were people raising their hands against others who discredited them. Yeah, we had the Kent State riots. Yeah, you had this free speech rights. You had the cops using water cannons and so forth. But that was the end. That was the absolute end of the restrictions. Yet nowadays, when we talk about it, you can't say this because it might offend somebody. This is a microaggression. This is a trigger response. You can't talk about this, that, and the next thing. I was listening to a bar review program that somebody asked me to check out. And one of the issues you discuss in criminal law is rape. A disgusting crime of violence. Notice how I didn't refer to it as the crime of sex. Sex is a tool. The act is actually violent. But now they don't even, according to what I was told, they go over the concepts of the legality of the issues of rape, but they don't talk about a question of it because it might trigger somebody taking the exam. How are we supposed to prepare ourselves if we're not willing to discuss concepts that are offensive? Louis Farrakhan. I find him to be one of the most offensive people on the planet. In the 1980s, he spoke at Rochester Institute of Technology. I happened to be a student at the time. There were protests. Did I go to the protest? No. There was a speech. Did I go to the speech? No. That's how I chose to protest. I didn't want to listen to him. I didn't want to give him the benefit of me hearing his hate, which I knew was anti-white and anti-Semitic, which pretty much cut me out completely because I'm both white and Jewish. But today, the goal is to silence things that you don't agree with. How would you feel if I told you I think that the idea of affirmative action has run its course? Would you lose your freaking mind? Would you say how bad and how misogynistic and racist I was because I decided that affirmative action has run its course? That's my opinion. And I can back it up. Because in the 1990s, which is 20 years ago, I used to work with black men who also said, it's done its job, it's time for it to go. The idea of giving somebody a hand, see, the whole purpose of things like affirmative action is to give a hand up. Give them a little extra, give people who have been discriminated against or not given a fair opportunity a hand up. But once you have people that are qualified and have conducted themselves with respect and responsibility, you stop looking at color or sex and recognize that those are people. The women that run major corporations today did not get there before because of affirmative action. They got there because of their skills. Black men that are running corporations, that are starting companies, that are, and black women, forgive me, get there because they can. Affirmative action has done what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to eliminate the issue of sex or race or color or whatnot. It's time for it to go bye-bye. It's time to put the playing field back on even ground again. You see, there are thoughts that come from the opposite side of the spectrum. You know, there's a lot of people out there that talk about, for example, Berkeley is losing its mind over people like Milo Yiannopoulos calling these guys white supremacists. People like Ben Shapiro being referred to as white supremacists. Look at who they are. You guys like to play race politics? You like to play gender politics? You like to play sex politics? Look at who these people are. Milo Yiannopoulos is a white immigrant homosexual who speaks from a conservative point of view. Where is he a supremacist of anything? Ben Shapiro is a short Jewish guy who wears a yarmulke, who's well-educated and speaks very well and runs his thoughts and ideas to the point where if you can argue with him, he'll listen to you. But who gives the public the right to squelch the ideas by simply stomping? The heckler's veto is called. When you see a comic or somebody speaking on stage, you simply heckle them enough that they distract them, that the conversation goes your way. That's not sharing ideas. Whether you like a group or not, I'm pretty sure you can find one idea that makes sense, that if you sat down and realized maybe a little tweak here, a little tweak there, things would work. But you can't turn around and just simply heckle them. You see, free speech in America is something that we take for granted of so much that we want to take that right away from other people. The only people who take the idea of the concept, the idea of free speech away from other people are those that are threatened by the idea of being challenged for their positions. Think about that. Think about, sit back, and if you were brought up in a religious home, how many times did you hear it? Well, that's what the rabbi said. That's what the priest said. That's what the clergyman said. Why? Because that's what God said. And he was told not to question. Yet the old joke happens to be, if you get three Jews in a room, you get six opinions. It's because we constantly question. Is it in our nature? No, it's pretty much in our culture. You never really trust everybody, and you always question something. But the Age of Enlightenment was developed by questioning things that were held to be sacred. Current science today questions things all the time. The debate over human life, the debate over genetic engineering, genetically modified foods, impact on our environment, these are all things that are questionable and should be. We should never stop questioning what we establish. Even facts get changed. And I don't mean facts that, you know, people are human beings. I'm talking about facts like, well, we didn't know how many moons there were on Saturn. We didn't know how far out, you know, how many different things there are between us and Mars. We didn't know if water could be found somewhere. You know, facts were there was no life or there was no water on Mars. Now they discover that there may have been water on Mars. Now they discovered that there may be life on one or two of Saturn's moons. Before we thought they were just simply clumps of rock or ice. Facts change. But if you keep them in a dogmatic perspective and you fight to the death to change things or protect things, you're never going to get to the truth. See, that's what I like about being a lawyer. The truth is not what you know. The truth is what you can prove. That's part of the way. The other side of the coin is there's always three sides to every story. That's a divorce joke, by the way. It's his side, her side, and the truth. And generally somewhere in between you'll get to the truth. But you'll never get to the truth. Even in a criminal law case. Even in a criminal law matter. Do you really ever get to the truth? That's why we ask 12 people to sit there and weigh the evidence. To make a decision. To make sure that they are so sure that this guy did it. That there really isn't any way to question whether or not he did it. And then you sit back and let the lawyers work about the appeals on whether or not technically actually things were done properly. I know, a little sidetrack, but it is what it is. You see, free speech is being threatened in America. And when free speech is being threatened in America, we lose the foundation that put us where we are. We lose the ability to sit back and say to our neighbors, no, I don't agree with that. I think it should be this way. I have a liberal friend, a guy who works with me. He and I are politically on pretty much opposite sides on a lot of things. He's a big guy for single payer. I could care less if the government was involved in health care and believe it shouldn't be. I believe in open markets. I believe that, for the most part, if government gets involved in something, they're going to screw it up. Fairly simple. I mean, the IRS took over a whorehouse here in Nevada years ago, and they couldn't sell pussy and beer. They lost money doing that. Yet they took the guy down for not paying his taxes. Figured that one out. Have you been to a casino recently in Las Vegas? And no, I'm not poking around at the 1 October massacre. It used to be they catered to the customer. It used to be that if you were a customer, that if you were playing at the tables, if you were spending your money in a casino, if you were helping their bottom line, they'd want to keep you there. They grant you free rooms. They give you a dinner. Maybe they even, in some instances, when you lost a lot of money, they might make sure you got home okay, maybe a refund a little bit, whatever it may be. But it was based on relationships. It was based on the interaction between people. Now what we've got is the same thing in the casinos as we have in the current political debate. Everything is by metric. Everything is measured and quantified and signified. And everything is done to the point where if it doesn't reach a certain level, it's not that important. I disagree. I'm pretty sure you do too. Sit tight for a second. We'll be right back. All right? Hold on.
The Warren Markowitz Show. It's his world. You just live in it. The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times.
Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz, host of The Warren Markowitz Show on Blog Talk Radio. Join me Tuesdays and Fridays at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time to talk politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle your fancy. See you there. Okay, so here's the circumstance. I'll give you guys a tip while we're listening here. If you don't know how to use things like Tor, that's T-O-R, or if you've heard about it on the dark web, or things like I2P, Okay, it's actually the letter I, the number 2, P.com. Then I suggest what you do is you go out and learn about them. Especially Tor. Tor is very easy. Okay, and the reason why I'm bringing this up is fairly simple. The only way to know your political opposition is to follow your political opposition. Or at least to check them out every once in a while. Whether it be the revolutionary communists or whether it be the alt-right. Whether it be the white supremacists or the neo-Nazis or whether it be Black Lives Matter or the Black Panther Party. It doesn't matter. If you're curious enough, if you're intellectually capable enough to actually read what these groups put out and try and figure out if there's any sort of logic to their position, you need to be able to read it. There's only one problem. Everything you do on Google is recorded. Every IP address you ping and connect to by your computer is recorded. Everything you do when you're connected is recorded. This broadcast is not only being recorded and placed on YouTube and on Spreaker and on Podomatic and iTunes and so forth, but the mere fact that my computer is connected to the server that's serving this is being recorded. And if you're like me, and if you're concerned like me, you'll recognize that sometimes curiosity is required. Now, I'm not talking about it for illegal purposes, because what we're talking about is not illegal. There's nothing in this conversation illegal. I'm talking about being able to watch or listen to something that someone may judge you upon later on. Just so that you know, whistleblowers, confidential sources for news, and people who are trapped in environments in which the mere communication of ideas is illegal use these tools. We're talking SOX proxies. We're talking Tor browsers. We're talking I2Ps. We're talking relays. All this stuff is very, very simple to get involved with and very, very easy to use. And I'm suggesting that if you're going to get involved in a free speech movement, if you're involved politically with anything, you need to learn how to protect yourself. And that includes possibly blocking your video camera on your laptop. Now, I'm not paranoid. I'm not paranoid. And I'll tell you why I'm not paranoid. Because it's true. If you've been living in a complete oblivion over the last several years, you've never heard names like Julian Assange or Edward Snowden. Now, I'm not approving or disproving or commenting about what these guys do. I think a free platform of news that provides information on what's going on when a government is crushing or attempting to vacuum up every piece of activity you do online, I think that's absolutely wrong. I think the concept of privacy, who I associate myself with, is protected by the U.S. Constitution, freedom of association. I don't think they have a right to know where I'm going. I have problems with the simple fact that everywhere I go with my damn cell phone, my GPS is on. And I, like most people, have gotten so damn lazy I keep forgetting where my own neighborhood is. Oh, don't worry about it. The GPS will tell me. Learn to use the tools. Go to the Tor project. Learn about I2P. Learn about how to set up a SOX proxy. Yes, it's actually S-O-C-K-S. And use the tools. Check out, for no less than the comment, check out your enemies. Look where they are. Yes, there are some people in this world that use these tools for illegality. They do things with them you're not supposed to. And you want to know something? When those people do things like child porn and getting into trouble, they deserve it. They deserve to get into trouble. But we're talking about ideas. We're not talking about abuse, we're not, or anything like that. That's not even a subject for another time. That's off the table. We're talking about being able to freely share ideas and concepts and to look at what's going on. How do you think I went to the altright.com last night? Or the Daily Stormer? I wouldn't be caught dead participating with groups like that. But then again, Black Lives Matter tends to throw up a whole lot of red flags, and so does Antifa. But you want to read what they're doing, too. You want to read what they're putting out, because you don't understand your opponent unless you read their materials. A more modern or perspective understanding. There was a story told about a unit during, I think, the first Gulf War. An armored unit. And they had captured a bunch of Iraqis. And one of the Iraqis had questioned why this U.S. armored unit, this tank, or this particular armored group, had a picture of Rommel in the back of their armored vehicle. And their response was, if you had read him, you wouldn't be sitting here. Patton read the writings of Rommel. Every military leader who has ever succeeded has read what their opponents have written. But we are in a world now that squelches that because it might offend somebody. It might be considered racist. You know, I was trying to avoid the debate that's between the president right now and the NFL and the president right now and the this crackpot of a congresswoman from Florida. I gotta say, let me get this one out of the way first. Anybody who joins the special forces, who gets involved in the active military, has a perspective that none of us have. Or I should say that a minority of us have. And I don't mean minority in color. I'm talking about percentage of overall population. I feel for the soldier's wife and his kids and his unborn child. And I respect the loss that she suffers. Nothing I will ever say. Nothing that you will and I will ever do will ever make it easy. The kids will forever grow up knowing their father lost their lives in a distant land. But they have to recognize that he lost his life doing what he thought was the right thing. He lost his life doing the job that he chose to do with the risks associated, but for the reasons that he chose. You know, I mean, we tend to miss that. Again, it doesn't make it any easier. And now I understand, even just thinking about it, discussing it, I understand a problem that General Kelly had discussing it yesterday on the news, or that President Trump had in making the phone call. What do you say? What can you say? Except trying to honor the decisions and the actions of the fallen. It's a no-win situation. And then to have this woman, this congresswoman, turn this into a political folly is ridiculous. And then to have the statement, an empty barrel, all of a sudden become racist. You know, I decided to look that up too, by the way. An empty barrel makes the most noise. I guess it was a polite way of him, the general calling her an idiot. Someone that lacks the perspective. I'm sorry. But we have to stop turning everything into a racial conversation. Because you can't have a conversation if everything and anything you do winds up being, you're a racist. Because we're not. Those who are throwing around the term, you're a racist, you're a racist, you're a racist, guess what? They're the racists. Because anybody who has any respect for anybody else almost immediately gets shut down if they're called a racist. More people are easier, it's easier to call a person a Nazi, which, by the way, is, in my opinion, worse than being a racist. But more people are able to at least have a conversation over the accusation. But as soon as you're called a racist, you have to backtrack and prove that you're not a racist. And of course, you really can't prove a negative, can you? Biggest problem in the judicial system. You have to prove something, not prove something didn't happen. It's a scientific headache. It's a cultural nightmare that we are destroying ourselves under the guise of equality. You see, pick a country or nation or a concept that's based on equality, but not equality of opportunity, equality of result, and show me a success. Take a minute. What we're looking for is a national identity or national construct that's based upon equality of result. And show me it succeeding. I'll give you a minute. All right. First off, the Soviet Union was an empire based on equality of result. It was a disaster. 79 years from birth to death until the Russian Federation raised its head out of the ashes of what would have been the collapse of Tsarist Russia. In that period of time, the Soviet Union dominated half of Europe, influenced Latin American politics, influenced European politics, and had under its control hundreds of millions of people all living just above the poverty line. Let me say that again. They were forced to stay. You couldn't leave the country without an exit visa. You were not allowed to travel. And if you were allowed to travel, you couldn't travel with your family because you might not come back. Any political construct which requires you to, A, cover your face in protest while you're protesting and hide your identity, or requires you to leave behind a hostage, is it worth the paper it's printed on? Even the Soviet Constitution, and by the way, there was one, which was a very long and detailed document that protected the religious rights of individuals and ethnic rights of individuals, was useless in protecting the religious rights and ethnic rights of individuals. It got to the point where there was no concept of being. It collapsed because it couldn't keep going. Now, you might shift gears and go, well, look at China. China's communist. They're doing well. No, they're not. They're not communist, at least. They're run by the Chinese Communist Party. They run with socialist ideas. But they're also working a system of two governments, two systems, one government. You see, they didn't kill the golden goose. They didn't take Hong Kong back in 1997 and all of a sudden wrap it up and toss it in the back seat with the rest. They're actually moving under a single-party rule. I'm not really appreciative of that, but we seem to be dealing with that now. We're just calling themselves two different things. They're moving from a single-party rule and a single-government rule and an autocratic ruling system to one that's an autocratic ruling system with capitalist ideas. Yeah, I used that big C word, that dirty word. Capitalism. the idea of making money. Private ownership of property, maintaining rights of an individual. China might be taking a long way, but give it 100 years and she'll be more of a capitalist society than we are today. You got 1.5 billion people to feed, clothe, and take care of. Trust me, you can't do it by forcing it down the throats of people. Which, by the way, is what they did with Obamacare, if I remember correctly. Force you to buy it or penalize you for not buying it. Great way of keeping an economic engine moving. Drain $1 trillion out of it and put it in the hands of a handful of people. Or let that money get spread around the economy where people actually bought things they wanted to buy. You see, we can't go from a success to a failure without really trying hard. And we're trying hard. We're silencing people who question dogma. The idea of global warming. Got news for you. I don't know if global warming is true or not. I do know for a simple fact that I don't want to live in a place where the air is dirty, where the soil is contaminated, or the water is, or the water I can't drink. It's that simple. I look at the rivers around New York City and I go, this is just gross. I look at the how we scrub and recover 90% of the water here in Las Vegas, and I realize, well, we got a pretty good handle on things. Then all I do is look over at California and realize how screwed up they are. How desirous of destroying their own state they are. On the premise of, well, we can't do this because it'll hurt the environment. I can't feed 500,000 people because I might kill a fish that should have been dead a century ago. But heaven forbid we bring these concepts up because you'd be screamed down, you'd be yelled at, you'd be ranted and raved. People will look at you like, oh my God, you can't do that. You can't say that. Guys, what it comes down to is this. If we move in the direction we're moving, if we allow a fraction of the population to look at half of the people and say that we're not worth protecting, we are worse than the worst government that has seen the light of this earth. Every one of us, our opinions don't have to agree, but we have to sit back and actually recognize that, yes, he's a low-life, sarcastic, underhanded white supremacist who wants to make an ethno-cleansed world of just white people. But what he said about X, Y, or Z might actually be confident, might actually work. And the other thing goes to the same side, if coming from the Black Panther side. And I'm not particularly picking on the Black Panthers, don't get me wrong. But people recognize what I'm talking about when I mention that. But I'm just going to point out a simple fact. Just a simple fact. Are we stronger together or are we stronger apart? Okay? I mean, we've had films made in California, A Day Without a Mexican. Okay? Check it out. The concept is fairly simple. It was a pro-immigrant film about illegal immigrants and how they work and where they are and things like that in society. And basically, you wake up one day and they're all gone. And you sit there and go, huh? There's nobody to clean my house. There's nobody to tend my garden. There's nobody to pick my fruit. With all due respect, I think it was taken to an extreme. But the point was made that people contribute. But when you sit down and you say to somebody, illegal immigrants don't have a right to be here, they turn to you and they look at you like, you're a horrendous person and you just want people to leave and you don't want people being here. No, that's not true. Illegal immigrants don't have a right to be here because they broke the law to get here in the first place. And we don't need, we as a society, don't need people who are coming here to take. And I'm not talking stick-up artists or hold-up artists or criminals. I'm talking about people who are coming here to be dependent upon others. Because when people came to America, they came to take, the only thing they came to take was an opportunity to make their lives better. Not to wait on their behinds and wait for the EBT card to be reloaded at the first of the month, or to get their welfare checks in the mail, depending on what period of time you want to look at, or to be taken care of by somebody else. But say that to somebody who's wearing a pussy hat and that you don't agree with them about illegal immigrants, and all of a sudden you become a racist. Got news for you guys. I'm not a racist. I like people. I like cultures. I like ethnicities. I enjoy learning about things. Hell, I was a wedding photographer for 20-plus years in New York. I have been to more different types of weddings that you and 500 other people you have ever met will have been to. I have seen an Indian groom arrive on a horse in a backyard of a small home, all decked out in gold, and a bride dressed in henna, and spent my time with my legs crossed photographing the service with the shaman or the cleric. I don't even remember what they call them, if you'll excuse me. I've been to Muslim weddings. I've been to Jewish weddings. I've been to just about every Christian denomination you can think of. I learned about jumping a broom from a pastor. I learned about cultures by experiencing them. So when somebody says to me I'm a racist because, or I'm an anti-immigrant or a xenophobe because I don't want people coming to this country, no, that's not true. I want the best of the best. I want the opportunity, and I'll say this, and the reason why I'm including this in free speech is because it's that important. I want the best of the best. I want America to continue to shine and be that light on the hill, that city on a hill that people want to come to. You don't want to go to the worst neighborhood in your area. I make this joke every time we go to a show over at the Smith Center, or we go we get misplaced in a neighborhood on our way to an event with the kids, or we go with the lacrosse tournaments. I always wind up driving through the worst neighborhood because we put the newest things in the worst neighborhoods because it's cheaper. Economically, it makes sense to improve the neighborhoods that are run down because you can buy it for less money. And I look at it and I go, I always take us to the nicest of neighborhoods, sarcastically. But you don't want to be there. You don't want to be there. People who look to say, well, you can't say that. Why? I don't want to go to a neighborhood that's run down where there's lots of crime there. The people don't take care of their homes. The people don't care about their homes. Or worse yet, the people, for the most of them, don't own their homes, so they don't have any responsibility to their homes. You see, free speech allows us to bang out concepts and ideas, to take the best of pieces of an argument. In politics, if you get half of what you're looking for, you're running about average. But the arguments that are developing, the fights that are developing, the ranting and raving, the destruction over disagreements. I mean, the idea is that you may not agree with them, okay? You may not agree with Farrakhan. You may not agree with Spencer. You may not agree with Shapiro or Yiannopoulos. You may not agree with Ann Coulter. You may not agree with CNN, Fox News, or MSNBC for that matter. But it doesn't matter if you can question them. And then questioning them also includes questioning them on not only their perspective, but their intentions. You see, I chose to bring this podcast back because I sat there and I wondered, am I the only one wondering what in God's name is going on? What the hell is happening? Well, I mean, I sit here and I wonder, how can it be that the place that fought so much, that shed so much light on the idea of free speech and the sharing of ideas, is the very place in which those free speech and ideas are being restricted? That campuses around the country are canceling speakers because kids are getting upset. And Children are being upset. When I was a teenager, I may not have, we didn't threaten to beat each other up if we didn't agree with each other. That usually happened when people were involved with alcohol, or there was maybe a little marijuana involved, maybe a poker game, or maybe it was a girl involved, or all of the above for that matter. But we didn't beat each other up over an argument because, ooh, that wouldn't work. You can't have that. But nowadays, what we've got is people arguing over nothing, over an idea. This concept of Antifa, anti-fascist, this concept of everything that they, if you disagree with what they have to say, you are a fascist. It makes sense, by the way. It's ridiculous. It's absurd. It makes sense, and I can prove it. Picture this in your head, okay? Left hand, right hand. On your right side, you have absolute monarchy. Well, no, correction, sorry. On your right side, you have anarchy. No government whatsoever. And then on your far left side, you have totalitarianist government. That would be monarchy. It would be a communist party, communist government. It would be centralized dictator. It would be a dictatorship. It's the absolute totalitarianist government. You move a little bit to the right of that disaster we call a single person government. You might have an oligarchy. A little bit further, you might have communism. As opposed to the communist dictatorship, but a communism under the concepts of, and as you can probably hear the sarcasm in my voice, of Leninism and Marxism, you know, the equality of the proletariat and all the bullshit that goes along with that. Then you move a little bit further to the right and you got socialism. And then you move a little bit further to the right of socialism, what do you got? It's called fascism, Italian fascism. Where the corporations and the centralized dictatorship of a government determines how things run. Right? What's the best thing that Italy ever had during World War II under Mussolini? The trains ran on time. Then as you move further to the right, you tend to head towards the center. And the center is a republican form of government, a constitutional government where you have equality and you have checks and balances and you have a limited form of government. So maybe it's a little bit further to the right than it is towards center left, but and then of course you start moving towards less and less government, and you wind up with anarchy on the far side. So the republic we sit here and protect and want to develop, and the democratic institutions we have in our states, those belong towards center right, maybe center left, depending upon where we fit. But that's where America is. So if you are a fascist, according to Antifa, you are anything right of a communist party. So technically, everyone and anyone who disagrees with them is a fascist. Which, by my calculations, makes about 325 million of us fascists. And if you agree with the absurdity of that, then you realize how dangerous a very small group of people can be and how threatening a very small group of people can be to the institutions in which they want to eliminate. They want to eliminate the idea of freedom of speech because your speech isn't free because it's tied to threats of violence, or your speech is violence, or your vote for Donald Trump was a violent act. So putting a little plastic card in a slot was akin to rape, and pushing the button was akin to theft. The whole thing winds up as a violent act. That's what their position is. There was a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Knowledge, the John Jay College in New York City that teaches most of the cops that I've ever met in that part of the country. He lost his job because he was happy enough to tweet that he was a supporter of Antifa, and he was proud to teach former future dead cops. What kind of ridiculous statement is that in general? And what kind of perspective do you have to detest the very people you're teaching? Aren't you supposed to influence? Aren't you supposed to explain? Aren't you supposed to advance the dictates of higher education by challenging your students? Even his professors are afraid to be challenged. You know what? I need to take a breath. I'll be back in a minute. Hang on. Hi, I'm Warren Markowitz, host of the Warren Markowitz Show. Catch me every Tuesday and Friday at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Spreaker.com to talk about politics, economics, and anything else that just might tickle my fancy.
The Warren Markowitz Show on Red State Radio, Spreaker, and Podomatic.
Good news, everyone!
Yeah, well, it is good news. Actually, as a side note, something a little bit funnier than we've been talking about. I'm actually hoping. I have no validation here. I know that on November 11th, the Sci-Fi Channel is supposed to be bringing Futurama back. I don't know if it's a new season or they're just bringing back the reruns. Either way, it's the series that just can't be killed. We love it. It's been canceled more times. If you're into podcasts, and hopefully you are because you're listening to me, there's a podcast out there. It runs about an hour and a half of a new Futurama episode. It is actually funny. You get to listen to them on Radio Vision, you know, when they had radios and not televisions. Check it out. If I find a link, I will post it with the description of this podcast as a side note, but I'm a fan. I like Professor Farnsworth and Fry and Bender, and it's just fun, okay? It just is. Anyway, what I was getting at was the destruction, the absolute destruction of the ability to have a conversation, whether it be in a classroom. I mean, I thought it was hysterical when I was in college in the 80s and even some in the 90s. My conversations during law school in the 2000s were even funnier. But you know, I had this one professor, and I can't remember his name. Indian fellow. He was somebody involved in the UN for a very long time. He was a teacher, a very well-respected professor. I liked the man. I liked the political classes I took with the man. And he had a very big influence on getting me involved with things that helped make my education better. And for that, I'm sorry I don't remember his name, but I do respect his memory in terms of his influence. Me, you know, I remember we had a conversation about gun violence, and it's even back then. So me being a smart aleck kind of individual I was, I brought a round of every firearm I owned, you know, one of every different caliber, and I laid them out across my desk. And I asked them to cause violence. And everybody looked at me like I was nuts. Well, and my argument was, you're saying that guns cause violence. Well, this is the part that goes boom. Go ahead. Short of banging it with a hammer or smashing it with an awl and hitting the firing the charge at the bottom, the primer, it takes an individual's contribution to the problem. It was that ridiculous perspective that allowed us to discuss the issue. Today, letters would be going home. I'd be suspended from a program. I might even be arrested for bringing a destructive device to school. And the ridiculousness and the silence continues. Listen, gang. I appreciate you spending the last hour with me. I appreciate you listening and sharing the podcast. More often than enough, I appreciate the fact that you're willing to be an active participant in the political discourse in this country. Because if it wasn't for people like you, and if it wasn't for people like us that are willing to simply sit back and listen and talk it through, the American experiment will fail. If we allow our rights to be silenced on the premise that it might upset somebody, that the discussion might trigger somebody. If you're that sensitive about words or ideas, then you really need a therapist. There is something seriously wrong with you. Or somebody should reach out and smack your parents for never telling you no. And allowing you to grow up in a generation in which you got a trophy for simply showing up and participating. This is the real world, boys and girls. There's going to be a lot of people out there that are going to be pissed off. And there's a lot of people out there going to wonder, well, how'd that happen? Like they did when Trump won the election? It's because the adults finally stood up. And if you don't believe that, look at the behavior of Congress. Maybe we'll just talk about that next week. Thanks for your time. I appreciate everyone. Check me out Tuesdays and Fridays at 10:30 a.m. Pacific time on Spreaker, Podomatic, and on iTunes. I appreciate everything, and I will be back next week. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
The Warren Markowitz Show. Politically incorrect speech for politically correct times. The Warren Markowitz Show. If you're thinking about it, we're probably talking about it.